Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com. May 7th, Thursday, 2009. We are recording this call. It's a community call. As usual, it's recorded. If you don't want your voice to be recorded or your facts to be recorded, you may want to hang up now. As is our usual procedure, I will answer the questions that have been posted on our discussion forums. I'm a little disappointed. One of the users, and I don't want to name any names, basically tried to post a set of questions that are basically related to him, but he tried to come in as two different users. And, you know, I'm sorry, I don't like people trying to be cute with me. I have no problem if people are honest and I can tell them whether or not I'm going to answer their questions. But this particular gentleman tried to ask a set of questions, first as one user, then as another user, and, you know, I can tell it's the same individual. And I have 100% irrefutable proof that this is the same guy. So I'm not going to answer either one of your questions. Both these questions I will completely ignore. I do not appreciate. I volunteer my time because I like doing this. If you ask me honestly, if I can answer, I'd be happy to. But if you try to play cute with me, I will not answer your questions. So it looks like we'll have plenty of time. Not to worry. I should be able to get this call completed in about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. That's what I'm anticipating. And it'll be nice because I do have to go into another conference at sharp 3 o'clock, so I will not have a lot of time left. All right? Let me get started, folks. I'm getting into my set of questions. Let us see. Start with question number two. One is just a posting by Monica. Zach has it. Carryover of experience after spin-off acquisition by for EB2 conversion. Well, the first question Zach wanted to know was this. I have a company that I have worked with for 5 years. And here's an example. This company then gets divided into two. And or there's a new spin-off, and the new company has a different tax ID number, and I go start working with that company. Can I use my experience gained with the prior company? And the answer is yes. For green card purposes, all labor certifications are based upon, or experience is based upon, your employer's tax ID number. If you are going to work for an employer who has a different tax ID number, you should be able to use that experience towards the new labor certification. So you can go from EB3 to EB2. I do not see any extraordinary potential issues other than what normally exists for EB2 cases. Okay, then question number two is, I'm going to travel to my home country. My wife is working on EAD-AP. I'm on H1. If she enters on AP, do I also have to use my AP? No, she's tied into you. You are not tied into her. So she can enter using advanced parole while you enter using your H1. That's no problem. Next question is from somebody who has, question number three, who has filed a MAVNI application, which is to the U.S. Army. They want to travel. They got laid off on H1. Well, you know, the easiest thing to do is, since you are going to start your basic training in late August, call your Army people, call your recruiters and the people in your, you know, who are your contact people in the armed forces. They should be able to get you an advanced parole. Normally, remember, advanced parole is issued in cases, well, let me not call it advanced parole, it's just called parole. They might be able to get you a parole. Parole is basically a permission from INS for you to re-enter USA, even though you do not have a visa stamp. Okay? So one of the things you can do is try to get a parole based upon your joining of the basic training in late August. Okay? So that's one way to do it. You can, of course, get another H1 and come back if you have a job. But, you know, if you're going to come back in June, July, are you going to come work for 2 months? That doesn't make any sense. So talk with the Army, and they should be able to straighten this out for you. The form that you use for this is form I-131. It's the same form that people use for humanitarian parole. I think it's the same form. I don't remember exactly. But advanced parole is the same form. Reentry permit is the same form. So I think it should be the same form for parole also. get in touch with your army people. Okay? Good luck with that. Next question is Lachu. This is question number 4. It's a very, very important question. I think I'm going to have to probably give it a lot more time one day, maybe even write a more detailed article on this. His question is, it's a very good question. Green card is for the future employment. Everybody knows that. Given the lengthy time for certain countries, it's quite possible by the time 485 AOS time comes, company can no longer support the petition from location originally specified in the form application. So what can the individual provide to USCIS that the initial intention was genuine? Okay, well, this is a very, very tough question. Very, very tough question with no easy answer. Generally speaking, if you are able to demonstrate that initially when the company started the green card application, they had every intention of hiring you and you of joining them. Of course, you can give your affidavit, you can get letters from the company indicating that intention and also describing in detail what has happened since that time and how they can no longer afford to hire you. And you can document that you were willing to join, you may be relatively safe. I was reading a case, I believe it was from the Third Circuit, just a month ago or so, and a very interesting case in which somebody in this situation basically wanted to join the future employer, called the future employer once, and then never called again. Basically, INS tried to revoke the green card, and they did revoke the green card based upon the fact that he had never joined the future employer. Next thing is, this case went to court, and the court agreed with the government. They said, you know, if you really want to go work for somebody, you don't just call once and then forget about it. You got to try a little harder, you know. There is no set pattern for what you should do, but at least genuinely, if you're trying to go work for somebody, you make a few phone calls, you send a letter, document it if you can. But there is no easy answer to this question. But if you can document that the company had the intention of joining when they first started, you had the intention of joining when they first started, and you still want to join them, but they have no job for you, I think your green card is reasonably safe. Second question from Lachu is that, is it possible to accept the position but later decline it? I'm not sure what you mean by that. Oh, I see. What you're saying is if somebody has become a manager or a higher-level manager since the filing of the application, that's it. That's almost certainly a loser. Because if you're not willing to join or somewhere along the line you change your intention of joining this green card job, then your green card can be taken away, and I don't know of any way of protecting you. Okay? Basie Forever is question number 5. My husband has a green card. He got married after he got his green card. So she had a B2 visa. She came here on a visitor visa. He filed for her I-130 in 2005 while she was still on B2. There are a lot of problems with your case. I mean, there is this entry is wrong. INS can construe that to be a fraudulent entry. But the good news is once he becomes a U.S. citizen, then nobody is going to create a big stink about it. Okay? So she went on to H-1B, did all sorts of things, maybe out of status, maybe unlawfully present. None of that matters. If you file through your U.S. citizen husband and don't travel until you get your green card in hand. So do two things. File through your citizen husband once you become a citizen and make sure you don't travel outside USA until you get your green card. Of course, it may be better for you to do a more in-depth consultation with a lawyer and go over the facts of your case. But generally speaking, I don't think you're unlawfully present, but I can't tell. Okay? You're definitely out of status. And you have a lot of problems with your entry, how you entered USA. But you did enter legally. And that's all the law requires, as far as I know. But this should be studied by somebody who can give you more specific and targeted advice. Normally, for the spouse of U.S. citizen, even if they have accumulated in unlawful presence and they haven't, as long as they haven't traveled outside USA, they can get a green card within the United States as long as their first entry was legal. You know, if you don't cross the border and or sneak through one of the land borders, you can get your green card to a U.S. citizen spouse, even if you're out of status or unlawfully present. Now, about the H-1 extension, etc., I'm very hesitant to send you to India or, you know, at all because of your first B2 problem. Because consulates can bring that up, and that entry, in my view, is very questionable. So I would, ma'am, not advise you to travel outside USA, but please do get yourself another lawyer. Question number 7. Lindner. Situation is, after 10 years of USA, came back to Europe with child after divorce. Okay. And left rental house, furniture, etc., everything in USA, and the ex-husband gave her permission to take the child to Europe. Child is now 17 and wants to go back to USA to finish her education. The lady's green card, mom's green card, expired in 2002. Well, the problem is, once the green card is gone, you don't get it back by filing a returning resident permit of any kind. Okay? I do not believe you're entitled to come in as a returning resident. And that particular relief is limited only to those cases where some extraordinary circumstances exist. So in my view, you do not have any options to come back as a green card holder. That's all I can tell you. Once your child is 21 years old and your support is not an issue, then you can try, then you can be sponsored by the child for a green card. Okay? Next question, number 8, LPR 3000. Does visitor visa always get canceled after I-94 overstay? It's another good question. I think you have also posted in my blog. Actually, I was going to answer that question this morning, but I got called away. Since you've asked it here, I won't answer in my blog. It says, if an extension has been applied and one doesn't hear from USCIS by the time I-94 date has passed, would the visa be canceled automatically if extension is denied later? And the answer is no. Here is how it works. Let's say your mom came on a tourist visa and she stayed here 3-4 months and then you applied for her extension. Okay. And let's say the extension asked for a date up to November 2009. You filed it today, she still has, let's say, 2 months left on her tourist visa status. When the 2 months pass, her I-94 is gone, but she's not out of status, you see. She still has an application pending. That application was timely filed, and as long as it is timely filed, she is still in status until November 2009, the date which you have asked, or until INS decides your case, whichever is earlier. So if they decide your case in December, you should have left in November. Okay? But if they decide your case in September and say, no, we are denying the case, you don't automatically lose your visa, but you should plan on leaving the United States right away. Right away, as soon as possible. In those circumstances, I do not believe the visa is canceled. Visa is revoked or canceled when you stay in the United States and fall out of status. Now, technically, when your visa got denied or your extension got denied in September and you left, let's say, 2 weeks later or 2.5 weeks later, you were out of status for a few days. But that is not the circumstance, in my view, that violates or revokes your B2 visa. I think you would still be good. Okay? Next question is question number 10. SWE-82, I applied for my I-140 under EB-2 in November 2008 with Texas, and they have not updated their website. USCIS has indicated in some of our meetings that they are having trouble with their website software, and I don't know what the plans for fixing that are. They are having trouble trying to update their website. So it is it is not in our control to fix that. Okay. His question is, what do you think is happening with my case? Why is it overdue? Well, you know, that's difficult for me to say. You can put in an inquiry through your lawyer or through your congressman, as long as the employer wants to cooperate with you. But you have to ask your employer or your lawyer to update the status. You can try calling the INS service, customer service line, but I doubt if they're going to be able to give you information on I-140, which is the employer's application. Okay, next question is question number 11, Imi_IMG. I have a master's degree in public health. I've been working for the state government as an environmental specialist in 6 years. I'll be able to get strong recommendation letters. Is it possible to apply for NIW? It is possible to apply for NIW, but you're not going to win it. I think it will be a very, very long shot. But I could be wrong, you know. What you may want to do is send us an email to contact us and just make a mention that you are your username is Imi_IMG, and I had told you to send me an email. They'll forward your email to me. I'll send you a 2-3 cases on national interest waiver that give you some idea of what the government is looking for. That should give you some idea. I think it's a waste of your money, but I could be wrong. You can read the cases yourself. Question number 12 from Jack Callis. In continuation to last question, which is the first question, okay, let me go back and see what that question is. I don't know what he is talking about. The first question is from Zach Hazard. Well, let me try to answer as best as I can. I'm not sure what the continuation is. Oh, last call question. I guess they had a question in the last call. I have no idea what we talked about. But I'll take a quick look. H-1 and H-4 of my wife. I-94 and petition expiring on 2nd June. Out of project. Don't have a client letter or work order to support extension. I can legally stay in USA by filing change of status to B2. Well, not if you are out of a project. That means you're already out of status. So you can't really file a B2 right now. That's not going to get you anything. If you're getting paid, yes, you can. Okay. So that's one thing to bear in mind. If you fall out of status, filing a B2 is not a good option. Anyhow, I'll go on and answer questions. Question number one, once B2 is approved from H1, H4 to B2, do I need to go out of U.S. to get it stamped to stay legally in the U.S.? No. If INS gives you a new I-94, which they will if you apply, I won't say they will, which they would normally if you apply while you're still in status. Can I go for stamping? Well, that I've already answered. You should be able to stay if you are given the B2 and it's applied for within your current status. Question number two, if I'm in U.S. on B2 and get a job, to again go to H-1B, I have to file for H-1B transfer. Correct? Correct. After getting H-1B transfer receipt notice, can I start working for the new employer or do I have to go to USA to get visa stamps? I think you can start working, okay, in my view. But I think there is some gray area there. I would like to look at the law one more time before I answer that question. But you can go to Canada or Mexico to get your visa stamping. That should not be a problem. If you've never been out of status, going to Canada or Mexico is an option, certainly for you. Okay. Question number 13, Poonam Banot. I entered USA last year on L2, got EAD in June, filed H1, but never worked. Delivered baby November 2008. The problem, Poonamji, is this. If you got a change of status to L1. Read my blog. It's there. If you got a change of status to L1, then you are out of status. Okay? But if you got your H1, but you did not get change of status, rule of thumb is if it came with a new I-94, then you got a change of status. So look at your H1 approval notice. If it came with an I-94, then you were supposed to be on H1 status, and you're out of status right now. So you should not apply for change of status go to India for stamping. Once you go for stamping, come back and apply for an E-80 one more time. Okay. Next question, S. Dermley. I have a full-time job. I'm working on H-1B visa. Can I volunteer for a medical research job? Yes, you can, if you don't get any benefit out of it. Read my blog and just do a search for volunteer. I think if you do a search for volunteer or volunteering, you should be able to pull up the posting I have made there. I have a couple of paragraphs explanation of who can volunteer and what the conditions are. Question number 15. Very good question. GC Philly 2009. The question is there any age limit for EB1 extraordinary ability aliens? The answer is no. The oldest person we ever filed an EB1 extraordinary ability for was in his 70s. I remember very distinctly. And I also remember a gentleman in his 60s who was a civil engineer for whom we also did. I think we might have done a national interest waiver for him. But in any case, age is not a factor. Okay? So don't let that deter you. In fact, here is the interesting thing, folks. In the United States, there are actually laws that prohibit employers from discriminating against employees or applicants just because they are older or younger. Age cannot be a factor in employment. As long as you're able to perform the job, nobody should be able to keep you out of an opportunity just because you're older or younger than a certain idea they have of how old or how young the worker should be. Okay, so don't let that bother you. Next question is IMM 2008. I'm on question number 16. New job and transfer of H-1 with GC in process. Okay, this is a follow-up question on GC process and potential job loss after company acquisition. Followed your advice and got a job offer in the current company which got acquired. Okay, EB2 priority date is August 2007. I-140 cleared last year. They did not apply for 45 and I-140 at the same time. Applying for H-1B renewal this month for 3 years. Okay. Got a job offer and new company says, wait till you get your receipt notice on your renewal from your current employer. We will apply for transfer of H-1 immediately after you get your receipt notice. Ask your current employer to transfer. I'm a little lost on your facts, sir. I'll tell you in a second what I understand your situation to be, and if I'm wrong, and if you're here, maybe you can correct me. Okay, ask your current employer to transfer your priority date to us, and that's your responsibility. Wait a minute. You don't need to do anything to transfer your priority date. Once the I-140 is approved, all you need to do is give a copy of your approval notice to your new company. That's the end of it. All it takes is a letter to INS to transfer the priority date. You don't need the old employer to do anything. We will file your GC in EB1 category as soon as you qualify. Look, I don't like what they're thinking. I don't like what they're thinking for a bunch of reasons. First of all, you have an I-140 going already. Okay? It's cleared. You can file a 485 and eventually get your green card. There is no guarantee you'll win an EB1 case. No matter how good your resume is, EB1s have become so difficult. More and more we are seeing denials. In our own office, I am seeing more trouble in EB1 cases than I have seen in the past 5 years. Obama administration's policies, at least from what we can see, seem to be stricter and stricter attitude towards immigration. That's what I see happening. Very, very tough adjudications. So EB1 is uncertain. Plan upon that. You can, of course, offer this to your new employer. Look, go ahead and file my EB1. If you win the case, I'll come and join you. Okay? That's the way I would handle it. I would not want you to jeopardize 10 years of your waiting to get your green card. At least do this. File your 485. Wait 180 days so that you are eligible for AC-21 and then use AC-21 to port. That's what I would recommend, sir. Okay? Question number 17. Before I get to that question, let me open the call and see if anybody has any questions. First of all, the first, out of the first 16 questions that I have answered, if anybody has any issues, and I would recommend that first we only deal with people who have posted their questions. If they have any questions, please go ahead. Anybody from the first 16 questions, press star 6.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hello, sir.
This is the 16th question, the last one you just spoke.
Okay, this is, hang on. This is the CB1 question?
No, the IMM 2008, number 16.
Give me one second. I'm a little...
You just completed this question, the last one.
Yeah, the EB1 question, right? That's what I said.
Yeah, the EB1.
Yeah.
In fact, this is for my sister. She's on EB... They have applied for EB2. Her
H1
is getting renewed, right?
The problem, sir, I have is that there is no guarantee the EB1 will get approved. If she leaves the old employer, the only thing she carries forward is her priority date. Her green card is gone.
So the I-140, which is cleared, that's also gone, right?
It's gone to the extent that if she's not working there and she has no intention of joining back there,
right,
then obviously she can't file for 85. Then that I-140 is only good for priority date and nothing else.
So when she moves her priority date to the new company, she has to wait for I-140 clearance for nearly 1 year, because that's what it took in this company.
EB1 I-140s are taking 6 months or so, but I could be wrong. You can double check. Although I have at least one case from 2008 still languishing. So
she can apply for EB1 as well as transfer this priority date for EB2 and apply for I-140 EB2 in the new company?
Look, if the new company is willing to start a new green card under both EB2 and EB1, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
Because that way, they'll file the perm application for her, which is a lot more secure than an EB1. But again, I don't know what her field is and how good her chances of getting a perm approval are. Remember, the job market is tight. If there
this is the OS category. OS category, the company has to agree. EB1, OS.
No, I'm not thinking OS only.
Right.
I'm thinking EB1, OS is not certain. That's a category which is like a toss of a coin. Who knows what's going to happen with it?
That's true.
Perm-based labor certifications are more certain.
You're right. In fact, she applied for it outside and she didn't get it, not the OS, because the OS, the employer has to be involved.
Right.
So she had to apply for other categories and that didn't
OS, work. You should see some of the rulings INS has come up with. One day I'll sit down and write a little bit more about it. I think what they are doing is illegal. Unfortunately, until I take them to court, even Administrative Appeals Unit, Appeals Office, their appellate body, has agreed with their interpretation of the statute. I think they are wrong. They have completely merged the distinction between extraordinary ability and outstanding researcher. We are getting rulings from INS which are mind-boggling. And I hate to say this, but sometimes they behave like they are monkeys with guns. They have all the power but no wisdom to exercise that power.
That's true. Yeah,
they come up with some strange rulings, and I'll give you an example. Some of the, and this is my pet peeve, these ridiculous rulings. I can give a list of the nonsensical things I've seen coming from INS. Of course, some of their people are very bright and we get some very good decisions. But some of these rulings are so dumb. And Administrative Appeals Office agrees with them. For example, one of their rulings is, in EB1, when you prepare letters of recommendation, letters from people who know you personally don't really count. Openly. How does that work? I mean, how the heck am I supposed to know who knows me by reputation?
Probably by citations or something.
Well, yeah, it's difficult. Even by citation, it's difficult to track everybody down and then have them write a letter. Second ruling. Well, when you prepare a letter in anticipation of an EB1 filing, that letter doesn't carry that much weight. Because that basically you are tailor-making your letter to win the case. Wait a minute. That means that's a chicken and egg problem. I can't win the case because I don't have evidence, and I can't present evidence because the evidence I prepare for the case is not valuable. Okay? And there are several dumb rulings like that, one after another. I can mention so many areas in EB1 where they have completely messed up what Congress intended. Unfortunately, until I take them to court, I'm not going to win any of these cases.
So frustrating, Rajiv, waiting for 10 years for a green card. And, you know,
but that's what I'm saying.
Acquired.
Look, what I'm saying is I'm not trying to convince you. I'm not selling you anything.
No, I didn't mean that.
Exactly. If it were my sister, I would be worried about two things. Getting a quick green card and getting a green card at all.
Right.
These are two things that are my primary considerations. Okay? EB1 is not certain.
Right.
There's no way I can tell if EB1 is going to come through.
So the best thing to do here is transfer your H1 after I get the renewal notice here in the current company, and then transfer your priority date for EB2.
Transferring priority date is not a problem. Once you have
right.
the I-140 approval, that's yours. Okay?
Okay.
Nobody
but
can
then
take
I'll have to apply for I-140 again.
Yeah, when you apply for I-140 again, what you should do is the company should file a perm-based application as well as an EB1. Both.
Right, right.
That's what I would recommend.
Because the EB2 dates are so far back and her priority date is August 2007. So I think to get this EB2 green card would be another 3-4 years at least wait. That's what we anticipate.
Yeah, not unless government wakes up and does something about it.
Right.
So already we are losing so much talent to these protracted dates. People are not migrating to USA any longer.
Right.
Why are the H-1 visas still available?
Right.
Some of it is just the economy, and some of it is that people just are not interested anymore.
So, Rajiv, one last question. I won't take too much of your time. When she applies for this H-1 renewal at this current company, she gets the receipt notice, so she can immediately apply for transfer. Is that safe?
I don't even know why she needs the receipt notice. She can transfer even without getting a receipt notice. When does her current H-1 expire?
November of this year.
Should
but 6 months in advance, they're applying for her renewal.
Why should she wait for a receipt? They can apply right now. They are not. There is something wrong with the immigration advice she is getting. This immigration advice is not from sharp lawyers, from what I'm hearing. Okay?
Oh.
Because there is no need for them to wait. Why would they want to wait? They can transfer her today.
Oh, I see. Okay.
What is the point of waiting?
And they transfer and she gets a receipt notice from there and she can move.
Why does she need to get a receipt notice? She's good till November. They can apply for her today. In 2 weeks, 3 weeks, if they apply premium, she's got her approval, she moves over.
Oh, I see.
Why would they want to wait for a receipt? I don't understand the reason for it. Of course, I say it with respect that I really don't know what they are thinking. But from where I'm sitting, the fact that you're giving me, the advice that she's getting is not very good advice.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Rajiv.
Good luck. Anybody else? *6.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Jack. Question number 12.
I'm confused with your question, Jack. Hang on 1 second. I wasn't sure what you were saying.
You answered my question. I have only one thing in there.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
So I did get.
Like,
I did understand what you were saying. Okay, good.
Yeah. If my H-1 is expiring on 2nd of June, can I file the visitor visa after it expires after 2nd of June, or
no.
I have to file?
No. It is not the petition expiring that I'm concerned about. If
okay.
you are out of the project, you're already out of status. Unless the employer is paying.
I am a full-time. Yeah, I am full-time employee, so he's paying me still.
Oh, they are paying. Okay, good, good. Yeah. Then what you should do is look. You should go online. On June 2nd,
okay.
while you are still in status, and apply for B2 online.
Oh, I can do it online on even till June 2nd. No need to do it before that also.
Because petition is expiring. What is the expiration date on your I-94? Is it June 2nd?
Everything
or?
Is 2nd of June. I-94, petition, H-1, everything.
You see, normally they say valid until June 2nd. Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Because if it says valid
until I-94...
Yeah,
I-94 stamp date is also 2nd June.
Yeah, it says that means valid until 2nd June, right?
Yeah.
That means on 2nd June you are still in H-1 status.
Okay, yes.
So, it
so,
makes sense to me.
Do I need a lawyer to file a visa or I can do
visitor
it by my
visa, I don't particularly see the need for a lawyer. Of course, lawyers, good lawyers can do a better job than you can, but you can do a better job than bad lawyers. This is that kind of a situation. If you go and read our blog, get the information. If you still feel uncomfortable, if you have one or two brief questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Just post them on the blog or send me an email.
Okay.
Remind me that
okay.
I had promised to answer a couple of short
okay.
questions for you.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot say that having a lawyer doesn't make a difference. But really,
okay.
you are filing this application to stay in authorized period of stay, not so much to win the case. Of course, you would like to win the case.
Yes.
It's a good faith application. But the primary motivation here is to stay in authorized period of stay. So why spend $1,000 to get a lawyer?
Okay. Okay. So even if my H-1 extension doesn't happen, I can file be a visitor visa and I can stay here. And if I get a job, I can transfer.
That's my thinking, yes.
Okay. Okay, and one last question, Rajiv. I read in your blog, you told we have to support it with some letter. Mm-hmm. So I can create that letter and send it to you for review if possible.
I won't do that. Look, that okay. creates malpractice okay. liability for me because then I'm involved with the case. You ask me generic questions, Rajiv.
Okay. If needed, I'll take your service directly.
No. Don't hire us for something like this. I don't want to charge you for this. I really don't.
Oh.
Because, you know, if you were in a job and you were making lots of money, I don't mind billing you for it. You're in between projects. I would hate to charge you for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't create value for you there. You would be better off just filing the application yourself, frankly, saving that money. And, you know, by the time INS gets back to you, God willing, you already have a job and, you know, you're already doing a new H-1. I'll be happy to do your H-1 for you. That's no problem.
Okay, definitely. And one last question, sorry about that. If somebody has already expired H-1 and that petition means expired H-1 extension is waiting, so can they file for a visitor visa or they can't?
You're saying that their H-1 is already expired, right?
Expired, and it's means the extension is in pending stage.
Extension is in pending stage. Okay, they cannot be 100% sure of getting a B2 within USA. Why? Because let's say their H-1 is good till today, okay? And last week they had applied for an extension of H-1.
Okay.
Once today passes, they're no longer in H-1. They're in authorized period of stay. They are waiting for H-1 extension, okay? Now, let's say tomorrow or day after tomorrow, anytime after their H-1 has expired, they file for B-2.
Okay.
B-2 was filed while they were in authorized period of stay, not in status.
Okay.
See, you can't go from authorized period of stay to status unless INS forgives you. You can go from status to status.
Okay.
If the extension is approved,
okay,
then that B2 application should be okay.
Okay. I got it, Rajiv. Thank you very much, Rajiv.
Good luck, sir. All right. Bye-bye. Anybody else? Star 6?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Yeah?
Hello?
I can hear you.
Hey, Rajiv, this is question number 21.
I haven't gotten to that question.
Oh, you didn't?
I'm still at 16. So.
Okay.
Yeah, give me a couple of minutes. I'll be right there.
Okay.
All right, I'm putting us in presentation mode again. Okay, I think I was at 16. Let me double check. Is age a factor? Yes, I did that already. And I did 16 also. Question number 17. This is TJ313. He's got a problem with his very, very strange issue with his, it's a complicated case history. I won't go into the details. I've read it, and I know what he's talking about. Basically, got a green card. I-751 is still pending, which is the removal of conditional status, but it's stuck in name check or security check. It's difficult for me to give you an answer. Let me do this for you. Let me give you 15 minutes to talk to me, okay? Send me, using the contact form on our new website, immigration.com, go ahead and send a copy of this question, okay? And say, Rajiv, you had a promise to give me 15 minutes of free consultation. Let me take a few minutes and explain to you what I think you should do. Okay? I am not going to come up with any brilliant suggestions, but at least I might be able to guide you in the right direction. I don't want to talk about it on this particular line because there are certain things I want to say which are confidential. So you may want to talk with me separately, and like I said, it'll be a free consultation. I'll give you 15 minutes. Okay? Next question, Sanjay Ramaswamy. Question number 18. Is N-470 necessary? Look, there's a lot of confusion in people's minds about N-470. And believe it or not, even I get confused sometimes. Because there are so many rules and sub-rules and exceptions to rules. This is the way N-470 works. If you have been a U.S. permanent resident and you have lived in USA without traveling, even for one day in the last 12 months, you can apply N-470. What does N-470 do? N-470 treats your stay abroad if you are working for a U.S. company, or there is a bunch of things that if you're doing, like if you're working for the U.S. government abroad, your stay outside USA is not considered to be interruptive of your citizenship, but it does not give you physical presence. Let me explain. Let's say I came and lived in USA on a green card for 2 years. 12 months, I did not travel at all. Now I want to go and work in Iraq for the U.S. government. Okay? I file my N-470. I go and work there for 3 years. I come back. Can I apply for my green card right away? No. Because I only have physical presence of 2 years. I don't have physical presence of 2.5 years. So you need your physical presence. You need your physical presence. That is important. So N-470 does not give you physical presence, but it does stop you from interrupting your green card for, interrupting your stay for citizenship purposes. If you had left without filing the N-470, you would have to come back and start your citizenship clock all over again. Okay? You would have to stay in the United States for, because if you have left for over 1 year, even though if you have left with a re-entry permit, let me explain also the interaction between re-entry permit and N-470. Re-entry permit simply protects your green card. And it also gives you 1 year and 1 day off when you come back after more than 1 year abroad. Okay? So you still have to accumulate your physical presence. It does not give you anything on the physical presence side. Typically, the way I do it, I always file N-470 and I-131 re-entry permits together. Okay. Now, the question that Sanjay had for me was this. I will be eligible to apply for U.S. citizenship in the first week of July this year. I plan to apply in July, complete fingerprints, and leave USA to stay in home country for about 5 months. I plan to keep my residence here, pay bills, preserve bank accounts. I'll be leaving my current employer and taking up a job abroad for 5 months. Bad idea. One of the first things INS looks for when they look at your status, whether you are domiciled in USA or abroad, they look for where you are working. If you take a job abroad, your citizenship application can be denied. So not only do I recommend normally N-470, 131 in all cases, in your case, I recommend you not to move until your citizenship is completed, sir. Okay? That's what I think you should do. Question number 19, R.P. Kishirodi. I'm in the country for over 9 years. I'm on H-1. This is number 19. Filed for labor in Jan 2005. Getting extensions. Labor was approved in June 2007. Applied concurrently for I-140/485. In November 2007, I got married. Wife is now here on H-4 visa. When can I add her to my application? Only when your priority date is current. What status would my wife end up if my 45 were to get approved before the priority dates were reached? Well, first of all, your 45 cannot be approved until the PD is current, right? So that's not a question you need to worry about. The only way things could go wrong is this. Think about this scenario. Let's say your priority date became current for 1 month, and next month it slipped back again. For some reason, you did not file your wife's 45 in that 1 month. Okay? So in that 1 month, your 45 was adjudicated by INS and you were given a green card. Now you could have a problem. Your wife would have to leave because you did not file her 45. Normally, remember, visa bulletin tells you the date for the next month. So you have a good 15 days notice to prepare the 45 and get it filed. There is no way there can be any trouble that I can think of. Okay? Not to worry. What options do I have to ensure that she remains in status? Let her get her own independent status, like an H-1. Although I don't think this is a real danger. Will it help if she were to move on a student visa? I don't think so. I don't see how that will be of tremendous help. I mean, yeah, of course, if you want to. But I don't see any point in planning for something which is not likely to be a problem. Question number 20. Planet Earth. Folks, I am running out of time. I'm not going to have a lot of time left at the end of this conversation. So I may not be answering. I'm pretty sure I will not be able to answer any new questions. You may want to hang up if you're looking for some time on new questions. I will only be able to deal with questions that have been posted. Planet Earth says, they have an H-1 approved from October. They are an F-1. Can they travel and come back on F-1? A lot of people have asked me this question. I do not know if there's a clear answer. Look, ICE has said you can travel on OPT and come back as long as you have a job. No problem. So you can travel on OPT. But INS has never said, or USCIS has never said, what is the impact of traveling on OPT when you have an H-1 already approved from a certain date, which is October 1st. I personally think it should not be a problem because your change of status kicks in only on October 1st. It's my personal opinion. I have no written authority for it that you should be fine. Okay? So take that for whatever you can use it for. Let get GC 2005, question number 21. I know you are on the phone. Let me get you to your question. They have posted a question on the last call. I answered it, but they were not on the call. PD can go with you. It does not matter even if the I-140 gets revoked. Yes. Or used by for some other employer. I don't know that the answer to that particular question. Okay. If the labor gets used for somebody else and INS goes and revokes your I-140 for that reason, that's a big, big murky mess. I don't know what happens in that case. But if I-140 gets revoked by the employer, that does not harm your priority date. Okay? So if you have an approved I-140 in your name, you left the company, joined another company, you can use the priority date of that old case. No question about it. But if the employer revokes the I-140 and use the labor cert, it used to happen in the old times, now they can't do it anymore. They use the labor cert for somebody else, that is a whole other ball game altogether. I'm not sure how that would work. I don't think INS has ever commented about it. At least I haven't seen any comments from them. So the answer is, in that circumstance only, where your labor cert is being used by somebody else, I don't know what happens to the PD. I know that we had tried to push some cases through and managed. But later on, INS may have changed their mind. This was way back early in the game, a few years ago. Ever since substitutions were stopped, this has stopped becoming an issue, so I haven't really kept up with what INS talked about. Okay? Okay, Cruise Patch is number 22. If today my wife, a green card holder since 4 years, files I-130 petition based on permanent residency, then what happens? Okay. If a green card holder files a green card I-130 for their spouse, the I-130 does get approved. They don't wait for the approval, just like I-140. Even the priority date is not current, they approve the I-140. Same way, I-130 does get approved. Okay. Then what happens is you can upgrade the petition, and normally you can actually make a copy of your wife's naturalization certificate. It says there, illegal to copy, but for this purpose, INS forgives us to copy the naturalization certificate and send a copy to the INS with a copy of the approval notice of the I-130 requesting that the case be adjudicated as the spouse of a U.S. citizen. In fact, you should file a 485 along with that. Okay? So 485 and a request to upgrade should be filed at the same time. U.S. passport, U.S. citizenship certificate, or any one of them, I would probably do both if I were you. Why not? Okay. Sikandar, I see number 23. I spoke with you recently. He says always eat dessert first. That's Sikandar's signature line. I agree with you. Always eat dessert first. Okay. Going to Africa, yeah, we had a very lengthy conversation, and I remember you trying to convince me to see things in a certain way that you wanted me to see, and me declining to do that. Look, no matter what you do, what I said the last time to you in our one-on-one phone call still holds true. Okay. Filing 470, etc., all these things do not help you when you are this close to citizenship. I do not believe an N-FOS 470 does anything for you. Again, I could be wrong about this. When you are close to taking an oath or you're close to filing an application at the last moment you take up a job elsewhere, I don't know if I would recommend that. although I must say I haven't specifically studied this issue. Okay. So in my view, what I told you the last time still holds true. Let's stick with that plan if we can. Core had, I think, mistakenly posted two questions. So we are at the end of our questions and we got about 10 minutes left on the call. Core says, my husband's, and yeah, Core is concerned, she's concerned that I want to come back on an H-1 visa. When I come back, can I carry some documents? Will I be stopped entry? A lot of people are worried about that. I have written a blog entry on this. As long as you have a genuine job, as long as you're getting paid, as long as you're working where you're supposed to be working and not approved for California working in Florida, you should have no problem re-entering. You want to take something with you, you can take your pay stubs if you want. That doesn't hurt. But, you know, it's not really a matter of real concern to me. Okay? Folks, I've got 5-6 minutes more left that I can talk. So let me open the calls only for people who have posted. And if there's time remaining, we'll deal with other things. Okay? Only for people who have posted. 1 second. People who have posted questions, *6, please. Anybody has any questions?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, question number 21. I want to just ask you about this. You already answered, but I want to make sure because we left the company, I-140 labor approved and I-140 approved.
Mm-hmm.
And we just joined back the company again, but in the meantime, they used the labor for somebody else.
Yeah, that I am very uncertain how INS is going to treat. I would have to really research that issue.
Okay.
I don't know the answer off the top of my head. My recommendation, sir, is go ahead and try it anyway.
Okay, yeah, because it's not hard anything.
I know for sure that we did several cases back when this first became an issue, and we were able to get priority dates for people.
Oh, because I remember that one time say in the conference, like, the PD will go with you once you get...
Right, but not where they have taken away the labor cert from you.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Oh,
that can become an exception to the rule. And again, you know, because we are paid to look for the details, not for the big picture only, little details can make a big difference. When somebody has reused your labor cert, can you still use the priority date? I would say yes, you can, because the regulation doesn't say anything about it.
Okay.
If you look at the regulation, it's under, I want to say, section 214 or 240. I forget the section. But whatever the section is, I remember the language of it. It does not talk about anything except revocation for fraud.
Mm-hmm.
If the revocation is for fraud, only then you don't carry your PD. Otherwise, no matter what, you carry your PD. That's what I would argue with IMS.
Okay, yeah. That's right. That's why I want to visit this next year, because I remember your wording.
It's worth a shot. I think you might be a by 2-6. And I would appreciate a quick email from you if you do win the case. Let me know.
Okay, sure.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck, sir.
Thanks.
Anybody else left, folks? Excellent. This is the first time in my life I have finished a conference call 6 minutes early.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Naveen.
Yes, Naveen.
I didn't manage to...
Oh, you didn't post. Okay, I'll answer your question. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Basically, I have received the Canadian PR, so we are visiting Canada by the end of this month.
Okay.
And so was just wanting to ask a few questions. And we all have, the whole family has valid H-1/H-4 visas till July this year for the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
And parents are also here who have valid B-1, B-2 visas till 2014.
Okay.
And we are all planning to visit, go there, get the PR, combine it with a tourist visit and come back.
Mm-hmm.
So just wanted to know anything particular we need to keep in mind with respect to the I-94s. I'm carrying all the employment verification letters. But anything particular one is to keep in mind with respect to re-entry into the U.S.?
No, for you, for H-1, H-4, I don't see anything particular.
Okay.
But I see an issue with people traveling on tourist visa.
Okay.
Okay. If your parents travel on tourist visa, don't be assured 100% that they'll be able to make it back without any problem. How long have they been here on tourist visa?
This time they've been here for about 2 months now.
Okay. And they got 6 months stay?
Yes.
They should be all right. But they're not going to give them another 6 months on re-entry.
Agreed. And we don't even want that.
Yeah. I think they should be all right. But make sure they get their Canadian visa stamp also.
Sure. I mean, I've already applied for that.
Oh, good.
So it all depends upon us getting those visas for them.
Yeah.
But,
no, I think we should be able to. By the way, just a quick comment about the future. We've had cases where INS has given people a lot of grief when they had permanent residents of Canada and permanent residents of U.S.
Oh, is it?
Okay, yeah. But my answer is very simple to INS. When they create issues like that,
right.
My answer to them is, look, you are not here to enforce Canadian laws. You should only worry about where I live, whether or not I live in USA. If I live in USA, you have no business asking me which other countries I'm a permanent resident of. I could be permanent resident of UK, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, and USA.
Sure.
That's none of your concerns.
So they've given grief at the time of re-entry into the U.S.?
Yes,
or?
At the time of re-entry. And unnecessarily, some of these people are so idiotic. They do not know the law. They do not know the law, and they think they do. I've had people handcuffed, not on this issue. And later on, when we raised the big stink about it, some of these people were senior people in their respective governments. We've had diplomatic notes sent, and then later on the government has apologized. You know, it was a big stink, and of course it didn't come in the newspapers and stuff, but we had a case like that.
Wow.
And the only thing I could just stand there and nod and shake my head, because I just didn't know what to say. But I was so chagrined. These people are so inconsiderate. Old man, you know, in his 70s, they handcuffed him.
That's not worth it.
Okay. Of course he was upset. He was upset because he was being detained for something which was not even, you know, it wasn't even reasonable. It wasn't even common sense. But the good news is most people are not that dumb. Most INS officers are well trained.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a feeling because CBP controls entry. Remember, the CBP stands for Customs and Border Protection. Some of these people are from customs. They're not from CIS. They don't really know the law.
Mm-hmm.
They've been trained, but they have not been trained well. But, you know, these kind of issues can crop up. Be prepared for them, but they're not going to hurt you eventually.
Okay, so ultimately, we are not on the wrong side as long as I have the valid visas and seeking valid entry into the U.S., correct?
In my opinion, you are absolutely okay.
Okay. Just a couple of things towards that. So we will ensure, you know, I'm ensuring that the original I-94s on my parents' visas, I'll take copies, because that is the date up to which we want them to come back to the U.S. with.
Yes.
Not 6 months, you know, not a fresh 6 months.
Yeah, just a continued entry of the same 6 months.
Yes, sir. So will they actually take away the I-94?
No, they may not. If you let them know at the border that, look, they are also going for less than 30 days,
right,
they should not take away the I-94.
Awesome.
Okay.
And then just one more thing, sir.
Sure.
My company actually got taken over by Deloitte. I'm working for Deloitte now.
Okay.
And so they did not do an H-1 transfer. They gave a letter, the successor of interest letter.
Okay.
And they said that the H-1 transfer is not necessary. I just confirmed with the legal department there that is it okay if I exit the country?
I'm sure if Deloitte people can afford good lawyers, I'm sure their lawyers have looked at the situation. And if they have given you a letter, that should be legally sufficient. Definitely the law is, if there is a successor in interest situation, the job is the same. They've taken over the responsibilities of immigration, liabilities, etc. You should not need a new visa. You should not need a new modification of H-1 either.
Thanks very much, Rajiv.
Okay.
This was great help.
My pleasure. Well, good luck, folks. Thank you all for being on the line.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.